This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A chant promoting non-consensual sex with underage girls has created a firestorm of controversy on two Canadian university campuses during Frosh Week. Student leaders at St. Mary's University in Halifax were the first to be videotaped as they enthusiastically led hundreds of new students in chanting phrases including U is for underage, N is for no consent. Then a similar incident occurred at University of British Columbia. CTV News, which broke the story about St. Mary's University, reports that offensive cheers promoting underage and non-consensual sex are prompting backlash, but also debate on university campuses across the country. Lucia Lorenzi is an interdisciplinary artist as well as a fourth-year PhD candidate in the Department of English at University of British Columbia. Her research examines the aesthetics and politics of silence in narratives of sexual violence. Lucia's September 6, 2013 blog post, "It Happened on My Campus Too," focuses on her initial thoughts about the St. Mary's University incident and her eventual shock at hearing about the similar University of British Columbia incident.
I spoke with Lucia Lorenzi yesterday and began by asking her about what she experienced as these incidents unfolded.
You initially wrote a blog post about a song playing misogynist lyrics at UBC during Frosh Week. Then the St. Mary's incident occurred. But you were relieved that that kind of behavior wasn't happening on your campus at UBC. But that changed. Tell us about the sequence of events here and what you experienced.
Early last week, I wrote a blog post about misogynist lyrics that I'd heard being played by a booth that was run by an off-campus nightclub. And obviously that, you know, it bothered me for various reasons. But I figured that since it was from an off-campus group, and it wasn't being readily endorsed by UBC, that it wasn't the worst thing that could have possibly happened. And then the St. Mary's University story dropped and made national headlines. And again, I thought, well, you know, sometimes these things happen and it's appalling. But I question whether or not this would happen at UBC. And then on Friday, their student newspaper broke the story. And I was really, really surprised and shocked that this was happening not just at one university, but at two universities. And so out of that shock and anger, I decided to write once again about how there is a culture of misogyny on campus, especially during these orientation week events.
You wrote in your blog post that UBC students who participated in the chant at UBC opted to keep it under wraps, or they argued that it was fine since it was only chanted in a less public area. It happened on a bus. Tell us about the dynamics involved in that.
Well, I think that it points to a larger problem, and that is that a lot of people think that it's okay to make jokes about, you know, whether it's rape or racism, as long as it's kept in a private area, if it's just a group of people hanging out. But I think what strikes me more at UBC than at St. Mary's is that people obviously knew that this chant was wrong. I've heard that they had had complaints about it already, and so they were actually making quite a concerted effort to make sure that this never got out to anyone, and I think that's why it was being chanted on the buses rather than on campus. And I think that that power dynamic really speaks to how far people will go to try and justify their behavior.
Lucia, would you use the phrase rape culture in your analysis of these incidents?
I absolutely would. And I know that rape culture as a term has been dropped a lot, whether it's in the mainstream media or people having conversations with each other. And it's a term that I think surprises people, because when we talk about rape culture, we really mean a series of beliefs that encourages or condones or glamorizes male violence, sexual violence especially, against women. And so within rape culture, sex is often seen as violent, and violence is often seen as sexy. And so rape culture is really a continuum of behaviors. It ranges from street harassment to workplace harassment to chants on a campus, all the way to actual incidents of sexual violence. So really, rape culture just means any actions or behaviors or messages that support the normalization of violence against women.
You disclose in your blog post that you're a survivor of sexual assaults, including one that occurred on the University of British Columbia campus, and your research as a PhD student focuses exclusively on language and its importance to cultures of sexual violence. Tell us about your personal and academic reactions and responses in this.
So obviously, as a survivor of sexual violence, I had a very visceral personal response to it. I think that people often forget that when you've experienced sexual violence, it can even be words that make you relive the experience or have to be reminded of the experience. And obviously, since I was assaulted on campus, I would have hoped that the campus is a safe place where I don't have to necessarily wonder what other students' responses are, if they support rape culture. But on the professional side, what was really interesting for me was just kind of analyzing how this has happened, why people say that words don't matter, it was just a chant, no one's actually going and assaulting anyone. But language really gives license, I think, to condoning those other acts. So if we don't crack down on language that supports sexual violence, it becomes even more difficult to actually crack down on those crimes itself.
What is currently happening at University of British Columbia with respect to this incident there?
So I know that from the professional side or the administrative side, that both the Dean of the Faculty of Business and the administration of the university have both taken very strong positions against this type of behavior. They've pulled their support for the Commerce Undergraduate Society's Frosh Weeks. And obviously they're still doing a fact-finding mission. They're trying to figure out exactly how kind of deep the history of this chant goes and who was involved. But on campus, I was on campus yesterday, and there seems to be a distinct tension. So I just heard in passing, I was near the business school, people were talking about it. The campus still seems to be divided in some ways. There are students who obviously are outraged, but students who are still defending it and saying that it wasn't a big deal. So I do think that there's quite a bit of tension on campus still.
I also have been following this story quite closely, and I was listening to and watching comments being made at St. Mary's University, and many of the comments that were included came from young women who said this isn't such a big deal. I think it's been overblown. What were your thoughts about that?
I've heard from a lot of friends and acquaintances and just seen it as well that there is a shock that women have been involved in it. But, you know, women, we also have internalized a lot of this oppression. I mean, I know that it can be women saying, why is she wearing that skirt and she's asking for it? And women do participate in rape culture as well, because when it's so normalized, I think it's very difficult for women not to absorb those messages. So I don't think it's that unusual. It's most certainly shocking, but I think it's representative of a larger way in which women still help to perpetuate these messages of misogyny and to excuse misogyny when it happens.
The media has used the phrase teachable moment in the reporting around this rape chant. Would you agree with that, and what are your thoughts on that?
I think that it absolutely, the conditions are really, really right now to have more education around this issue. And I know that several different types of education have been proposed. I know that at St. Mary's and at UBC, students who were involved with the chants will be asked to take sensitivity training or anti-violence training. But I think in a larger sense, for all of the students on campus and for society generally, we can use this as a moment to really sit back and reflect about our own attitudes about violence and sexism. You know, what are the moments in which we laugh at a joke that might not be okay? A lot of people say, no, we'll just send them all to gender studies courses or women's studies courses. But we know a lot of students will take courses and not necessarily retain anything. So So I think it's about having students really connect this to what's going on in their lives, what's going on in their friends' lives, their sisters', mothers', daughters' lives.
Lucia, is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation?
I think that, you know, obviously, like with any other news story, often, you know, after a couple of weeks, people might have forgotten about it. But I really want these conversations to keep going. We know that women have fought very long and very hard to not only get into universities, but to really find a space and to be seen as equals. And I think that this might be a really great way to spark a further conversation about what other ways do women necessarily feel unsafe or unwelcome in a university? What are the barriers that women are still trying to knock down in order to have a, you know, a good educational experience and to feel equal and valued in doing so?
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us, Lucia.
Thank you so much.
Lucia Lorenzi is an interdisciplinary artist as well as a fourth-year PhD candidate in the Department of English at University of British Columbia. Her research examines the aesthetics and politics of silence in narratives of sexual violence. You can find Lucia Lorenzi online at lucialorenzi.blogspot.com. Kevin, what else can you tell us about the University of British Columbia's response to that incident there?
Well, Ash, I'd like to talk, let's say, generally about some of the other responses as well. As you can well imagine, a lot of this is happening online. And so everything that I refer to here has emerged online either on September the 11th, which is yesterday, 2013, or today, September the 12th, 2013. First of all, in the week, this is from the Huffington Post. In the week following the revelations that a pro-rape chant was sung at frosh events held by UBC's Sauder School of Business students, Huffington Post BC learned that concerns were raised about inappropriate chants as early as 2009. And Ashta, the same story unfolded in Halifax, where interviews were held with people that had brought concerns forward in previous years. Now, the University of British Columbia Commerce Undergraduate Society, that's the group that organized the event at which this chant occurred, they issued a news release yesterday, and it was picked up by a number of news outlets and websites online. And I just want to say and acknowledge that the president of the undergrad society there at UBC Commerce and the vice president engagement, and this is Enzo Wu and Jillian Ong, have resigned from their respective positions. And the news release from the undergrad society and the commerce faculty there quotes them as being deeply apologetic. Ashta, I went over to the Facebook page of the UBC Commerce Undergrad Society, and these two sides to the argument, you might say, that are unfolding are present there. Here's a post from Johnny L. I'll say, "Can we please stop holding people who volunteer for student organizations out of their own time, in addition to their studies, to the same standard as politicians? These students who resigned had little they could have done to prevent this from happening. Can we also stop targeting specific individuals who are at most partially at fault and try to focus on the real causes of this issue? Groupthink, peer pressure, and tradition. Do they deserve this witch hunt? Absolutely not." Carl V. writes, and this is once again from the Facebook page at the UBC Commerce Undergrad Society, Carl V., "A lot more can be said in apology to those who had to listen to the chant in person, the people who had felt peer pressure to chant along due to internalized rape culture, the stress the chant has had on so many university students and people looking to be involved in campus culture, inadequate funding to anti-violence initiatives in society in general, the violent objectification of women, sexual assault in our society, and all the identities that disproportionately face sexual assault." And Carl V. concludes his post by saying, we need to take responsibility for our mental health collectively. Mm. And the last thing I want to share with you, a couple of commentaries, you might say, I guess they're newspaper columnists. Margaret Wendt, or Wente, at the Globe and Mail, and I'm just going to take two paragraphs from her column called "Rape on Campus, Is It an Epidemic?" She writes, "Don't expect the notion of rape culture to die down anytime soon. Too many people have too much invested in it." She goes on to conclude, "As for dirty-mouthed undergraduates behaving badly, it was ever thus. Are they obnoxious? Yes. Are they a sign of widespread moral rot? I doubt it." And over a few pages over, Russell Smith at the Globe and Mail writes under the headline, "It's time to end the Frosh Week tradition." He writes that misogyny is only part of Frosh Week's larger idiocy. Frosh Week's silliness itself is anti-intellectual. It's against every quality that universities are supposed to instill. It's time to end the tradition. And he goes on to say that everyone knows that the best students don't participate in the raw, raw hysteria, even in first year. The best students are hiding in their rooms, wondering if this whole thing is going to be just as bad as high school. Those are some of the comments I found online, Ashta.
Interesting. Thanks.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.